There's something special and memorable about the first weeks and months and years of a new married couple's life together, especially when both of them are not very rich financially. I've heard stories from my own parents of the trailer that they lived in when they got married, a little trailer park, and they've told me stories about their life there. I've heard stories from my father and mother-in-law about moving to here and taking baths and showers in a baptistry and using cardboard boxes for their furniture in the initial years of their ministry here in the city. Sarah and I were not necessarily quite so put out when we were married, but we did live in an attic, four little tiny rooms converted into an apartment, $450 a month. That's a pretty good deal. And every single room had ceilings like this because there was no full and complete room in that house. I could talk like this without the microphone, of course, anywhere in the house, and we could have a conversation no matter where my wife was. We had one closet, and the living room furniture was a pull-out sofa bed that doubled as different things. When we had a baby coming, we had to move out because it wouldn't have fit. It was fun, though. Those were fun years. There's something special about those times when you're not always quite sure in those early years if you can pay every bill when it comes in. There's something fun about scrimping and scraping everything you can so that you have Christmas presents or so that you can put together that Thanksgiving meal. I remember for our Thanksgiving dinner, our first time that we were married, the kitchen was just too small to do a whole kitchen meal just for the two of us. And I think we flew Zach Swanson out that year as well. And the tradition at my previous church was to do a Thanksgiving thank you service to the Lord, a praise service on Thanksgiving morning from 10 to 11, and it always ended promptly at 11 o'clock. And I got the idea that if I handled the turkey, my wife could do everything else in the kitchen. We just couldn't do everything, including the turkey. So I took a three-burner grill that someone had given to us out into the snowy yard in the back of the yard, and I went online, and I figured out how to grill a turkey. And the way you do it, very simply, is that if you have three gas burners, you light the outside burners, turn off the middle burner, and you take a pan of turkey or chicken broth, and you fill that pan up, and you put a wire rack in there, and you sit the turkey on top of that dressed so it has liquid underneath it to get hot and the heat going around it like a convection oven. And so I turned it on, followed the online instructions, went to church, came back from church, and the whole neighborhood smelled like our turkey. And it worked. It turned out very well. We hadn't had to do that since then, and the turkeys have been good as well. But that was just, yet again, having to be creative in those early days. There's something special about those days when your need for God is very real. But then, of course, as you grow and you're able to build up a little bit of savings and accomplish a few of your spending goals and you're able to establish yourself a little bit, you're not necessarily praying for the grocery lists anymore. You're not necessarily trying to figure out how to cook a turkey and everything else in that kitchen. You're not necessarily worried about, are you going to be able to fit in this house? The Lord begins to take care of some of those details, at least in our American way of living. The fact is, though, there can be a deadly exchange that takes place in the transition from those early years of meager living to the later years of established, comfortable living. What is that deadly exchange that can occur? Is anybody following me here? Eric? Self-reliance, less of a sense of your need to depend on the Lord. More things are possible without prayer. As the Lord builds the bank account, as the Lord establishes your housing, as the Lord gives you that vehicle if you need one. And I don't know exactly when that moment occurs, but you can find yourself growing in personal stability and decreasing in dependency on God. And if we don't stop and think about it, we can go on in that state for a very long time. When we get into that state, what does God do sometimes? He will introduce into our lives some obvious trials and challenges, things that we don't wish on anybody, car accidents, cancer, losses of jobs, and so on and so forth, things that are more than just paying for a bill. Why does he do this? Revelation 3:17 says, "Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." The point I want to make tonight is very simple. We should depend on God for everything, not just the obvious trials. We should depend on God for everything, not just the obvious trials. Our topic tonight is give us day by day our daily bread. Point number one, every detail of life is an opportunity to depend on God. Every trial, detail of life is an opportunity to depend on God, every detail. Bread is a very general term for food in Scripture, and it really does tell us, it refers us back to just the basic elements of life. It doesn't necessarily mean bread, white bread, wheat bread, honey wheat bread, whole grain bread. That's not all that it's talking about. Leavened bread or unleavened bread, I guess, for a Jew. Matzah, right? Is that the stuff that you bring sometime for the Ittai to fellowship? It's talking also about meat and vegetables and fruit and all the produce that God provides for us to partake in life. The basic needs of life. And we're not used to living day by day in America very much. Although I have to say, living in New York City, there are challenges. It's not all that it's cracked up to be from the outside, perhaps, in the world's way of thinking. There are challenges. There's an element of survival that is there. But we need to understand that just as manna was given to the Israelites in the Old Testament in the wilderness on a daily basis, that is the way that we should find ourselves depending on the Lord on a daily basis in the most ordinary things. Let's also make this point here, letter A, that God tests us in obvious ways. God tests us in obvious ways, we cannot deny it, in ways like the Red Sea. It's really hard for us to take the idea of a Bible story and really feel the sense of its reality because it becomes sort of a myth in our mind, a story that we know is true, we believe it, we don't doubt it at all, but it still doesn't seem real world real to us. It seems like a real Bible story, right? I want you to imagine, though, best as you can, what it would be like to get all of Faith Baptist Church together, to get all of our children together, to pack up all of the clothing that we can carry on our shoulders, and all the food that we can pack into our backpacks and our pull-behind briefcases and suitcases, and then we start walking down Astoria Boulevard. And we start doing this. We head off down Astoria Boulevard, and we cross over the expressway or under the expressway. We wind our way down to the, maybe we'll take the George Washington, let's say. We'll take the George Washington. We'll walk out of New York City, and people will say, "What are these people doing?" And we'll walk out, and we'll cross over. We'll get into New Jersey, and we'll just keep walking. And we cross to New Jersey several, maybe half a day later, and we walk into Pennsylvania, and we just keep walking. Can you try to visualize doing that with your tennis shoes on, doing that? That's what the Israelites are doing. They're walking out of their country. And then they turn around and they walk up and they're facing the Susquehanna River. As they stand at the Susquehanna River, they didn't plan right and there aren't any bridges available. And there's a big mountain off to this side and there's a big valley down on this side and there's no way that we can navigate that. We're standing at the Susquehanna River 7 o'clock at night, and it's threatening to rain. And we look behind us. Let me ask you a question. Let's say that I'm in charge of this group, and it was my idea to go out and do this. What are you all thinking about me at this time? We knew there was a problem with this new pastor. We've been patient, and now the case is closed. He has a problem. We should not have followed him. What do you think I'm feeling at this point? Really bad. And we turn around, and the whole NYPD task force is after us. We can see the lights going. We can see everything. And they think we're a bunch of kooks, and they're going to arrest us because we're dangerous to society. And I say, folks, everything is just fine. Do you believe it? This is where the Israelites were at. This was not a normal, everyday circumstance, by the way. This was an obvious trial. And Moses took that rod, maybe for me it would be my Bible or something, he held it out over the water, and it just split in half. What are you saying at that point? A change of mind. This is actually pretty good. Let's go. Let's walk through it. And not only did they walk through, they didn't get any water on their sandals. It was dry. It was jet dry. Get across the Susquehanna River. The police, they all come marching in. And then the waters come down on top of them. And we keep walking across Pennsylvania. That's the situation of the Red Sea, if you can imagine it. Very unusual. We have things like this happen in our lives. We have unusual things happen, usually unplanned. But let's not live for those moments. In fact, those are not moments we really want to happen very often, right? We don't like those phone calls about the death of a loved one, or we don't like those news about, oh, we just lost the job that we've had for 40 years and we were just getting ready to retire and now it's gone. Or we don't like the news that we wake up and all of our retirement investments have crashed and there's nothing there anymore and we're retiring in 5 years. We don't like those kind of things. We don't like to come home with our family and see that our house is burnt down. These are not things that we want to live for, and these things do happen. But I think we need to get to a place in our lives as believers that we learn to trust in God, not just in the crises of our lives, but we learn to trust in God in every moment. Not just when you're taking your kids and walking across the Susquehanna River, but when you're sitting down for breakfast every day, when you're going to the store to buy your food, or when you're going to church and trying to decide what form of transportation you're going to take. In all of these things, we need to depend on the Lord. We often forfeit this opportunity to draw near to God in the little things. Letter B, he tests us in ordinary ways like the manna. He tests us in ordinary ways like the manna, our daily provisions. Today, we forfeit these opportunities to draw near to God because we have so many ways to survive without depending on him. These things are not necessarily wrong, but we depend on them. Things like credit cards and bank loans, cell phones with texting, instant messaging, internet access in any place in the world, big box stores, eBay, Amazon, automobiles and airplanes, UPS and FedEx, and government programs of all sorts. While these conveniences are not wrong in themselves, they can easily shield us from our need to depend on God. We need to grow to a point of maturity in our Christian lives that God doesn't have to wake us up to our need for him by sending the big trial. That we have gotten to a place in our lives where we're seasoned veterans enough to know that we must depend on him for everything. How is God arranging the details of your life right now, in big ways and in small? Think about the Israelites in the wilderness. They felt like they'd been misled at the Red Sea, and then Moses vindicated God's leadership by watching the sea split in half. And as they crossed over, they were jubilant, and Miriam praised the Lord, and she was thrilled to death. But then there was the wilderness. And in the wilderness, God said, I'm going to feed you in a different way. Your daily meals will come day by day, and don't try to save any for tomorrow because it will go bad. That's why there is something so special about those early days of marriage or those first days in college, those times in your life when the bank account almost doesn't exist and the next bills are going to require a miracle to pay for. All you have to go on is love, you know. There is something special about those days because there actually is. You're depending on God a little bit more. God sometimes does take the events of our lives and he does put us into a manna situation sometimes. He makes it so that we really don't know what is happening the next day. You ever have that happen in your life where life is moving along fine and then you realize, wait a minute, for the first time in a while, I don't really know what's happening tomorrow? Or he'll take you along and you've been fine financially and all of a sudden you have to watch your money for the first time in the last 20 years because you just don't know. You're living off of your savings now and that's new. You ever have that happen to you? I know John last summer was going through a situation where he didn't know where he was going to be living and if he was going to be in school this semester, and it was a day-by-day trial of faith. God will at times put us in a condition where we have to trust in him, and you know what we're tempted to do? We're tempted to complain and say, Lord, I've been working for 25 years. Why don't I have a job now? I should have a steady job. God says, no, that's the point. You had a steady job, and you stop trusting in me. But where's the job? I took it away. But I'm here. I'm right here where I was when you didn't have a job 25 years ago. Maybe we can spend some time together. Maybe we can get together on this thing. On the matter of finances, whatever the case may be, God puts us in a place where we're depending on him more. And that's important. What are some details in life that God is arranging for you? Number two, we need to depend on God for everything together. Not only do we need to depend on God for every detail of life, we need to depend on God for everything together. I've pointed this out in Philippians 2 on our Sunday morning series, but let me point it out here as well. The word you and us and we in this passage are plural. Give us our daily bread. It reminds me of Galatians 6:2, where it says, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. One of the other things that happens to us as we grow and we become more self-sufficient in life is we stop thinking and empathizing with others. We become more distant. We need others less, and we become less aware of the needs of others. We begin to dwell in our private houses, and we begin to have less and less company, and we begin to put less and less fellowship on our schedule, and we begin to come to church less and less, and we find ourselves less plugged in to the faith community that God has put us into. It also can happen in a very personal way in a family where you become more sufficient and more self-sustained in life, and you, as a married couple and as family relatives, become less reliant on each other as well. What used to require close fellowship as a couple, now all it takes is money. You can buy that thing or whatever. You don't have to talk about it as much anymore, pray as much together anymore. And the promise of comfort, security, and satisfaction actually robs you from God and from each other at the same time. How well do you know the needs, large and small, of other believers in our congregation? Have you prayed for other believers in our body this week? Have you taken any steps of action to express encouragement or help meet a need? I know it's a thought that I continue to bring up, but it's a thought God continues to put into my study and put into my preaching and teaching preparation and into my own personal life. One of my burdens and visions for Faith Baptist Church is that we are a connected community, not through technology so much as through our lives, connecting with each other, meeting one another's needs, reaching out, communicating, understanding, helping one another. That is what it's talking about here. Give us our daily bread. See, one of the things that would happen in the early church is that as Christians would come together and form churches, they would become more noticeable in the public, lost community around them. And they would receive persecution. They would receive hardships. They would lose jobs. They would find themselves with widows, and there were no government programs to care for widows, and they would have these widows that would need cared for, as ladies sometimes would even get saved, and their lost husbands would disown them. And they had slaves in their body that needed support, and they had other trials that would come up just from the government or lost relatives persecuting them, harming them physically, damaging their property. And what you find is they began to need each other more. And as a group, they needed bread. As a group, they needed miracles. And this is one of the things that really hurts us in America, I feel, is that we don't sense the need for miracles as a group. Some of us have well-paying jobs, and it's all well and good for us to come to church. But when we go back home, all it is a prayer list. Because when we go home, everything's fine. Our bills are paid. We have a nice house. Everything's fine. We should live with the reality of the needs of the body. We should live together in that sense, bearing one another's burdens and so fulfilling the law of Christ. Give us day by day our daily bread. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. This is not a new struggle. This is the struggle of human nature. It is something that God himself was aware of as he led the Israelites into the promised land after 40 years of manna. Here's what he tells them before he turns the manna off and sends them into a normal life, a life where there is abundant fruit, abundant produce, abundant vegetation, abundant meat, abundant milk and wine and so forth, a land of plenty and comfort and provision. Here is what he tells them before he turns the manna off. We're going to read through this chapter. Let it prepare our hearts for prayer. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall be you observe to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware to your fathers. Thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee and to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and he suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, and that he might make thee know that man does not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Let me just give you a quick jolt again. Do you remember those days in your early parts of your life? Maybe you're in them right now, where you just realized the need for the word of God more than anything else. You weren't as mature and self-sufficient. It says this in verse 4, thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. The point is, you're still alive. You didn't die in those early years of your marriage. God took care of you. What was wrong? Verse 5, thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chastens his sons, so the Lord thy God chastens thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. Sounds like the local grocery store, doesn't it? And the Home Depot. When thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. And now here's the warning. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day. Lest thou, when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses, sounds like the progression of the American life, right? And dwell therein, when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, or your cars and so forth, and when thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, thy bank accounts, and all that thou hast is multiplied. Retirement accounts. Then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee and that he might prove thee to do thee good all thy latter end. And thou shalt say in thy heart, my power and the might of my hand hath gotten me this wealth. Thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do not at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall you perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. Have you broken out of the day-by-day need to depend on God? Have you become a little more self-sufficient? Have you lost something? I'll tell you one thing that has been good for us moving to the city is, I mean, we had challenges in Milwaukee, but we did own a house. And moving here now, humanly speaking, was a step back. I don't own a house anymore. And I couldn't own one right now if I tried. You know what? I'm kind of enjoying that. It's reminding me of those early days. There's something special about that. And I've even told the Lord, maybe, and it's not that I'm not planning to own a house, but maybe there's a way of keeping this going for my whole life where I always feel the need to depend on you. Because what happens is you grow up and your children only see parents who have it all. And what do those children then go into life expecting? To have that. And we actually sell that idea in America. Start like your parents and go farther. Get richer. My father was smart and wise in that he told me, son, I'm not paying for your college bills. Zero. You're doing that. Now, the truth is, he bought my clothing and he gave me my first car. And Dad found sneaky ways to be at help. But the bill had my name on it. Oh, he got his own copy in the mail, but he never paid attention to it on his word. He let me sweat it out. He let me figure it out. And he stepped in and paid the last bill unasked. And there wasn't much on it at that point. But then I remember just a day before graduating from college, I got my last bill in the mail, and there was still money on it. They had forgotten to assess a few different graduation fees and so forth, and I didn't have money to do that. I had paid all my bills, but I was dry. I got that bill in the morning after church. Somebody walked by me in the hallway and gave me an envelope with my name chicken scratched on the outside and said, oh, by the way, I was talking to a pastor in Illinois that I knew a little bit. We didn't know him very well, but I did know him. And he said to give this to you. I opened up the envelope, pulled out the check, and there was a note. Someone was a blessing to us, and I was a burden to pass it on to you. I hope it's a help. You know how much it was for? The exact amount that was still on my bill that day. I signed the back of the check. Daniel knows this. I walked down the hallway right into the church offices and gave it right to Mr. Nobile. I graduated free and clear. I'm not quite living quite that way right now. In some ways, but not in that particular way. I do have some money in the bank. That's a special memory, and I'd like to have a few more of them. What was the big deal about that story? It wasn't the check. It was the fact that God did it. Here's a challenge I want to lay before us before we go to prayer. Could it be that we are as members of Faith Baptist, good, godly, self-sufficient Christians? Do we need him more than we realize? Let me encourage some of you younger folks here who are waiting on God for things, singles and people in college and making some big life decisions, feeling the pinch. Enjoy it. It's a special time of life. Draw close to God. You'll never regret it. And for those who are in the middle of life or at the end of life or nearing the end and you're putting the finishing touches on your securities, maybe ask the Lord, without causing any major damage, to give you that dependence again. Notice that God did take the Israelites into the promised land, and he gave it to them, paid in full. That wasn't bad. It's okay to get established in life, but it actually is more of a challenge because it's harder to depend on God. It's the ultimate test. We need to depend on God for everything.